you know, when I look back upon it, it's just really bizarre to think that there were all these amazing characters that were involved, most of which I keep in touch with. Michael Morantic, who co-hosted for a while, who also worked at Harmony House at one point. He's since passed away, moved to, I think, Portland or Seattle, and he passed away. But the things he taught me, which were just the unethical shit that record labels would do back in those days to get a record on an FM rock station, which still to this day, the example I can give you is the Sandinista had come out. It was a three album thing for $9.99. So three pieces of vinyl for $9.99, where normally they were $12 in those days for a piece of vinyl for one. So what would happen is the guy from Columbia Records would call in and say, how many boxes did you sell of REO Speedwagon? They'd say, we sold three. How many boxes did you sell of this? We sold whatever. How many about this? How many of the Clash? Five. And then the guy would look at these numbers and go, add the five of the Clash to the REO Speedwagon, because I'm never going to get the Clash on Riff. And this is what would happen. Riff basically would call in an hour later, and basically they would adjust the numbers, because the guy who was giving them, you know, the information, you know, the information that five boxes of Sandinista had sold, would add the five boxes onto the one box of REO Speedwagon. So REO Speedwagon suddenly sold six boxes of albums when they'd only sold one. So Riff would call in. The guy who would fudge the numbers would give a pair of tickets to the kid who worked at the record store to go see the Clash. So this kid basically got the pair of tickets, fudged the numbers with this guy. So Riff would call and go, okay, we're doing the, you know, whatever they called it, call out in those days. We're doing the call out. How many, okay, here's the chart. REO Speedwagon, number one. Blah, 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 blah. Pink Floyd, number five. And the Clash at number 10. Oh, that's not going to make it on this radio station. And then the guy would hang up the phone, call the next Harmony House or whatever it was. So the charts in Detroit were manipulated because these record labels just knew instinctively that nobody was going to play a record, even if it sold. They were fighting against, you know, Columbia was fighting against RCA. So if a Bowie album was out, Bowie was doing, like RCA was doing the same thing. They didn't care how many records the Joe Boxes sold. They just wanted to get the Bowie numbers up so they could get traction against REO Speedwagon. So for years, this is the way it would work. And Morantic, who was working at Harmony House, I think at the time, I'm not sure which one he was working in, but basically would tell me that every time that phone call came in and they would make him adjust the numbers because they wanted the airplay, he would be like, I know what's selling. I'm here. I'm watching these pieces of vinyl go flying out of the store. So when we started playing the Clash a lot more, it was because there were guys in the, you know, in the trenches, if you will, that were informing me what was really going on. So Michael had access to tons and tons and tons of good underground music. He was an avid record collector as well. Lived in Palmer Park, very close to Bookies. So he was constantly bringing in cool underground stuff to play. And that's kind of how it worked. It was about this underground network of miscreants that basically put this whole bizarre, you know, web of information together.